the Brewers of Hyde Park True Lager, the beer that's extra aged by Father Time, present that well-known writer, narrator, and sports authority, Johnny Niblett, in a dramatic presentation of So the Story Goes.
Tonight you'll hear the story of a man who was held prisoner for 42 years, but whose jailers never saw his face. You'll also hear the story of the original Cinderella.
Yes, here he is, Hyde Park's own Johnny Niblett, and So the Story Goes.
Of all the intriguing mysteries that have puzzled the world, here is perhaps the most baffling. The mystery of the identity of a man who was held prisoner for 42 years, but whose jailers never knew what he looked like, even though they saw him every day. On a night years ago, a fierce storm raged over the lonely island of Saint Marguerite off the southern coast of France. Yellow flashes of lightning outlined against the sky the stern gray walls of the island prison. Above the howling wind and crashing thunder, the thud of galloping hooves announced the arrival of a new prisoner of state, another poor devil seized and made prisoner by King Louis XIV. As the horses dashed through the storm to the prison gates, the carriage rocked wildly to and fro, then careened madly to a stop. Several heavily cloaked figures alighted and hurried through the open gates. Then, in a few moments, they returned to the carriage, all but one, and sped off into the storm-tossed night. Thus began the most singular historical mystery of modern times. For why should a prisoner of state be brought secretly to the prison in the dead of night? In the days that followed, the mystery deepened. For this prisoner, in a day when prison life was unspeakably cruel and usually a round of suffering in a filthy cell without even food and water, was treated with deference and respect. He was served the finest wines and choicest foods. Even the governor of the prison himself waited on him. His guards always stood at a respectful distance, and he had his own personal servants. Yet, neither guards nor servants knew who he was, nor why he was held prisoner. Days passed, weeks, months. The months lengthened into years, and still the strange prisoner continued his secluded and closely guarded life behind the stone walls at St. Marguerite Prison. For 29 dreary years he languished behind those walls. And then one day, once more, a carriage rolled away from the prison gates, this time carrying the prisoner north to Paris, to a home behind the heavy iron bars of the Bastille. Here, as before, his extraordinary prison life was resumed. He was served the rarest wines and most appetizing foods. His suite in the prison was elaborately furnished. But still, though his guards and servants saw him every day, none knew who he was. No one could identify him. After 13 years in the Bastille, 42 years after he first entered prison, the man of mystery died. But with his death, you say, wasn't the mystery of his identity solved? No, for he went to his grave still unknown, still unrecognizable, and even today we only know him as the man in the iron mask. Yes, that was why his guards and servants who saw him every day never knew who he was. From the time he first entered St. Marguerite Prison until the coffin lid was closed over his dead body, his face was concealed behind an iron mask. Steel springs in the lower part of the mask permitted him to eat without removing it. Here, then, is the mystery. Who was the man in the iron mask? Why was he kept a closely guarded prisoner for 42 years? And above all, why was the wearing of an iron mask so necessary? Was it because his features might have revealed his true identity? Some historians think so. Those who believe he was really an elder twin brother of Louis XIV and rightful King of France. But equal in number are historians and biographers who believe he was an obscure Italian minister to the French court. Still a third school of thought is firmly convinced he was the English Duke of Monmouth, son of Charles II. Letters and documents have been produced to lend weight to every contention, but there was only one man in the iron mask. Perhaps one school of thought is right. Perhaps they all are wrong. No one knows. And so the story goes, this bewildering story of a man who lived and died unknown, and who even now is as great a puzzle to historians as ever. Strange and fanciful legends have been written about the solitary figure doomed to a living death, but the world knows him now, and will probably always know him only as the Man in the Iron Mask.
I'll take Hyde Park.
What in the world are you mumbling about, Charlie?
Well, Johnny, I was just trying to see if a man who wore an iron mask could say, I'll take Hyde Park. And I found out it would be rather hard to do, but well worth the effort. Because whenever you do say, I'll take Hyde Park, well, you get the most delicious, most flavorful beer you ever tasted. That's what Hyde Park is, you know. Just brimming over with that real beer flavor you like. As you know, flavor is mighty important to beer. And Hyde Park is the beer that's famous for its extra flavor. Yes, patient old Father Time himself extra ages Hyde Park beer to give it that extra smooth, extra mellow flavor you prefer. So next time a glass of beer looks good to you, remember to ask for the beer that's extra good, Hyde Park True Lager. Then see for yourself just how Father Time's extra aging does give Hyde Park extra flavor. And now Hyde Park brings you Johnny Neblett and his second story.
Here is the story of a girl you first knew of when you were about 6 or 7 years old, and yet you've probably never really heard of her at all. Through the vast Sahara Desert flow the smooth waters of the Nile, one of the world's great rivers. With its life-giving waters, it transforms the sandy wastes into a fertile strip of land through the heart of Africa. For thousands of years along its banks, the people of Egypt have grown their crops, built their cities and temples, and feared the crocodiles, those ugly monsters that lurk in its depths. One day in the dim, dark past, the king of Egypt held his court of justice in the open air near the left bank of the Nile. One by one, they appeared before him, those of his subjects who wished justice done. Gravely, the pharaoh listened to each complaint and then handed down his decision. A hot wind blew out of the desert to the west, whipping up tiny white-crested waves on the river and fluttering the robes of king and commoner alike. The sun shone fiercely, pouring its hot rays on the sweltering court. Suddenly, something that looked at first like a bird sailed through the clear air, dipping and gliding, and at last slid to the earth at the feet of the pharaoh. He glanced down, puzzled at this thing that had apparently come from nowhere. He clapped his hands. An attendant picked up the object and handed it to the sovereign. It was not a bird. It was, of all things, a sandal. A tiny, gaily embroidered, bejeweled sandal. The pharaoh turned it over in his hand. Why, it was the tiniest, daintiest sandal he'd ever seen. Its precious gems twinkled in the bright sun. But where had it come from? Who owned it? Where in all Egypt was one with so small a foot? The king sent attendants through the great crowd looking for the owner of the tiny sandal, but each returned shaking his head. No one in the great throng lacked one sandal. Now, a king's curiosity is not easily disregarded, so rising to his full height, the young pharaoh announced,
"Let it be known throughout all Egypt that whosoever discovers the owner of this sandal shall receive as reward from the royal treasury 20 pieces of gold and a red velvet robe."
For weeks, the entire kingdom buzzed with excitement. Where had the jeweled sandal come from? Who would claim its ownership? And what would the pharaoh do when the owner was at last found? But day after day, no one appeared at the imperial palace to claim the reward. And then at dusk one cool evening, just as the stars were shining their brightest in the darkening sky, a slim young girl tiptoed up the palace steps. Great husky guards thrust their spears before her, refusing her entrance. Timidly, she showed them her feet. One foot was bare, but upon the other was a tiny jewel sandal, the mate to the one the pharaoh had. The guards marched the slender, dark-eyed girl into the great throne room. Slowly, she walked toward the mighty throne upon which sat the pharaoh of all Egypt. Kneeling, she bent her head, and in a soft voice told the great ruler that some days before she'd been bathing in the River Nile. To her dismay, she'd seen the wind sweep one of her sandals into the air. It had looped and twisted in the hot desert wind and then blown out of sight. Rising, she pointed to her feet. One foot bare, upon the other a tiny sandal, its delicate embroidery and brilliant gems flashing in the light of the flaming torches that lit the huge stone room. The whole court watched breathlessly as the young king lifted his head. But what was this? For weeks, the king's mind had been centered on that small sandal. Now he seemed to have forgotten it entirely. He saw only the slim, dark-eyed girl gazing up at him. And, well, he was king of all Egypt and worshipped by his people as almost a god, but he was human, too, with human emotions. And what could be more natural than he fall in love with the lovely girl who stood before him? Rising, the young pharaoh announced,
20 pieces of gold and a velvet robe shall be given this maiden. But her reward shall be even greater. Half the throne of Egypt shall be hers, for she shall rule beside me. She shall be queen of Egypt.
And so they were married and lived happily ever after, this pharaoh of Egypt and his lovely queen, the young lady historians record as Rhopatis of the jeweled sandals. And so the story goes, this true and romantic story of ancient Egypt. No one has ever been able to decide whether it was by design or accident that Rhopatis' sandal was blown by the wind into the presence of the king. For you see, the Nile at that point was so heavily infested with man-eating crocodiles that no one ever bathed there. And two, it does seem rather strange that Rhopatis owned those richly jeweled sandals, for she was the daughter of a merchant in most modest circumstances. None of her other garments matched in richness the tiny pair of sandals, one of which was blown or thrown at the feet of the king of Egypt. Perhaps it was a clever plot to draw the attention of the pharaoh to the brown-eyed girl, but at least it was a romantic one. But I said at the beginning of this story that you'd heard of Rhopatis when you were just a youngster, and so you have. Although you probably never heard of her as Rhopatis, you certainly have by the name under which her story has come down to us through the centuries. The details have been changed somewhat. A pumpkin added, and a stepmother, and even a fairy godmother. But that little Egyptian girl, Rhopatis, of the tiny jewel sandal, was the original Cinderella. Well, that's all for now, folks, but we'll be back soon to bring you more of these true stories gleaned from the walks of life. In the meantime, this is Johnny Neblett reminding you that careless talk can cost lives. Yes, it has happened before, and it can happen again. And the way for every American to guard against giving vital information to the enemy is merely to think before you talk. Then, if what you were going to say could possibly help the enemy by giving information about military supplies, personnel, or movements, don't say it. Careless talk can cost us lives and ships and even battles.
You have just heard Johnny Neblett in another dramatic presentation of So the Story Goes. These quarter-hour visits with Johnny Neblett are presented for your enjoyment by the brewers of Hyde Park Beer, the beer that's extra-aged by Father Time for extra flavor. And now this is Charles Irving saying goodnight for the Hyde Park Breweries Association, Incorporated of St. Louis, Missouri, makers of Hyde Park Beer.